Hello, I'm Rosie and I'm the radio coordinator at Distorted, and I'm finding out about the ins and outs of all the jobs in the music industry. Today I'm joined by Gino Van Eyck, co-founder and strategic director of Future House Music. We talk about how he began in the music industry at such an early age, his journey as an entrepreneur, and his advice on carving out your own career path in music. Enjoy!
What we're doing now is we have our own team. We create our own rules. We create everything ourselves and we choose the direction of where we go. So that's obviously a way bigger plus than, you know, coming in for a boss and having somebody else tell you what to do. The hardest and most challenging thing is it's a 24/7, you know, lifestyle that we're also kind of like living. It's hard to turn off.
Hi Gino, thanks for joining me today. You are the strategic director and co-founder of Future House Music.
Correct, yeah, co-founder, strategic director.
Yeah, could you tell us a little bit more about Future House Music?
Sure. I think maybe the best way for me to start is to talk about like what sets us apart as a label. So we have a artist first mentality, which means that, you know, we want to do quality over quantity. We only have one release per label that we do per week. Some labels obviously go for a lot more of these songs, but we always try to invest more in a lower amount of output than to invest, let's say, less per song and just increase the quantity. But we... yeah, this is our foundation of what we started on in 2014. We've been doing that ever since. We also have a sub-label that's called The Myth of Nyx, which was launched in 2019. That's a tech house sub-label. And then also last year, we started another sub-label, which is Wobbles and Waffles. And that's a drum and bass label that we kickstarted. Besides that, like I said, we're located in the beautiful city of Rotterdam. We have a team of about 10 people here. We did events from North America, all over Europe, like the O2 Academy in Leeds that we just talked about as well, as in to Asia, to Japan, what we did last year. So I think that's kind of like Future House Music in a nutshell.
Nice. And did you start off as a social media community? Is that how you first started?
I think one of the other things that also really set us apart is that we had a very big community behind us, because we have a we started also with a YouTube channel. So maybe a little bit more about me and my business partner. I was focused a lot on like the label stuff, and my business partner Art, he actually came up with the YouTube channel. And with the YouTube channel, we were not limited to only post music that belongs to us or we necessarily own the rights, but it was also just for the movement and people that wanted to hear more of this music, that we basically posted anything from any label, including ours, but also of other people. And I think that definitely had a very strong foundation for, you know, the whole company of Future House Music, because we were really pushing a movement. And that's also where the social media aspect came in, that we always had like a very large community of people following us, maybe out of fandom for the artists that we push, or maybe out of fandom for the songs that we, you know, create and sign ourselves. But we weren't necessarily restricted to anything. And I think that was also one of the things that we had a lot of flexibility with.
Talking about yourself then, why did you decide to have a career in the music industry? And I suppose, what did your path look like?
How far do you want me to go back with this question?
All the way back, all the way from the very beginning.
So if we really go all the way back, I would say that, you know, when I was maybe like 10 years old, my brother came home with Magic's Music Maker. I still remember software, which you could, you know, you could just create some loops and stuff like that. And that's kind of like where my, let's say, tickle for music started. And then over the years, high school, spent all of my free time and also like not free time that I should have studied on just making music, producing music. I was selling reggaeton beats to South American rappers online. I was selling samples online on DVDs on like the Dutch eBay. And throughout high school, me and my business partner, we actually were in the same class. And I used to DJ at some school parties. He had a DJ set. So then after hours after school, we used to play together as well at his house, and then started performing at some small shows as well, like at school parties or local events. Then during university, I studied information sciences, which I don't do anything with the degree today, to be really honest. But I guess it laid kind of like a foundation for a way of thinking, I guess. But then during university, we were still, you know, like DJing together. And we went more on like the entrepreneurial side to discover, you know, the business of music. And for me personally, I already had like some small labels that I had started just out of, you know, passion for music. I felt that there was like a very big disbalance in fairness in the label industry as well, that the deals towards the artists were super tight. Having signed some songs myself to some small-time labels, I felt like, you know, the artists were very overlooked. I think that's also where, you know, the Artist First philosophy kind of like was born. So with this idea, like I said, my partner, you know, he had the YouTube channel. We started to put things together. And this is kind of like how we started while we were still in university. And then after we graduated, we were on, you know, like a student, what do you call it? Like student benefit from the government. It was around like 600 euros a month or so that we got from the government. And we basically said, let's try this for, you know, like 6 months. If after 6 months we cannot match the 600 euros a month, then we know we've tried, but it just wasn't meant to be. But I don't think it even took 6 months before we actually knew that we could actually pay ourselves 600 euros. And after that, it just only went up. And then from there, we're now going on 11 years. So we've been together quite a while doing what we do. We actually had a documentary that we also brought out last year, kind of like showcasing the 10 years of Future House Music, going back to the early days, diving deeper into the label and its origin story and the highlights that we had over the years as well. And yeah, now we're here. So that's kind of like a hope in a nutshell as well. But long story of how my own career path kind of started. I never decided actively to go into the music, but because I was always so infatuated with music, it did pull me in more and more. And naturally, I started working in music as well.
Yeah, it sounds like you've always had this entrepreneurial mindset as well from the age of 10, yeah. Did you say, of knowing how to sell a product, whether that's your tracks or your business.
Yeah.
Yeah, it sounds like you've been very motivated from the start, really.
Yeah. Yeah, honestly, for me, there wasn't really another option. I didn't want to do an office job. I didn't want to, like I said, I studied information sciences, but I didn't want to go into an office job where I would have to do something with information sciences. I always wanted to do something in music, and I couldn't wait to graduate. That was the one thing that my parents always forced me to do, to first get a degree. And after that, you know, you can do whatever you want. You're free, which I also appreciate, you know, for pushing me, because I think I would have dropped out earlier if it wasn't for them. But yeah, for me, it was always destined to be in the music industry somewhere. Yeah.
And do you think you were always destined to lead a company, or was it ever an option for you to work for somebody else, or were you quite focused on you wanted to work for yourself and build a company for yourself?
I wouldn't say that I'm like, you know, anti-establishment or anti-authority or something like that, that I'm that rebellious against working for a boss. But I do think that, you know, when I have a very strong idea about something, I would really like to test it and see what comes out of it. So if I'd be working in a space where I wasn't giving you know, an opportunity or something like that, or I couldn't really understand why a company was moving in a certain way, yeah, it would have been a lot more difficult for me. And I think we're blessed that what we're doing now is we have our own team, we create our own rules, we create everything ourselves, and we choose the direction of where we go. So that's obviously a way bigger plus than, you know, coming in for a boss and, yeah, having somebody else tell you what to do.
Yeah, definitely. And what does a typical day in the life of Gino look like? What do you do on a day-to-day basis?
I think I have a short answer and I have a long answer for that. But I think the long answer is, you know, as like a co-founder and CEO, it's not always very fixed what you do. There's no fixed like job description. But to give an example, with like this week, we have a lot of like meetings that's all around like the label management stuff. So doing meetings regarding, you know, where we are at with certain releases, what's happening with the planning, then going over to coordinate with the design team that all the assets are delivered on time, etc., to make sure that all the artists are happy, to checking in with a few artists regarding their demos that they've sent over, to make sure, you know, we either get some feedback going or we would move over to like signing that track or telling them simply that it's not for us. And then this week, for example, I have to go over the performance reviews with the rest of the team. So that's always something I do every quarter as well. And I really enjoy to, you know, help the team grow personally. They call it a little therapy session with me, because I really like to think about, you know, like, you know, what can we do to improve? What can we do better? Have you thought about these things, etc.? So yeah, again, it's not very fixed. It can go from things like this to then all of a sudden, okay, we have a show in Japan coming up. So there's a couple of things we need to arrange for that before we get there, etc. So it's very different, but I think that's also probably the part that I really like, that is just, it never bores you out, more or less. It's always just like very different, yeah.
And do you travel a lot with this role?
Yeah, I mean, over time, for all of the events and everything that we did, we've seen a lot of places. I think also the perks of being in the music industry is, let's say you would go on a holiday to a certain place, you would see kind of like what's number one on TripAdvisor. But going there with, you know, people that are locally from there, you always get to strange places you normally wouldn't really get to, but only with the locals or somebody who has a way in or something like that, you will get to really nice places. But yeah, we've been blessed, like I said, to do it from North America to Europe to Asia. So we've seen a lot of places and been to a lot of places, yeah, for sure.
What's the most challenging thing about what you do? I know you said you really enjoy your different days and no days the same, but what's a challenging part of your role?
I think one of the challenges that I've personally faced is, you know, the mental pressure that also comes along sometimes in the music industry. So I think for an artist, it's very easy to say you need to perform on stage. And then after that, there's performance that you need to do like online, let's say on your socials. But for me, it was like at some point with running the business, I did some tour management as well for an artist. Very, you know, loving what I was doing, but at the same time, not taking the right care of myself. And it was very easy to like creep up from out of nowhere that I started having, you know, panic attacks, and later turned out into like a burnout. So I think the hardest and most challenging thing is it's a 24/7, you know, lifestyle that we're also kind of like living. It's hard to turn off, but it was only after that that I started paying attention to balancing things out a little bit more in my life, and also turning that, you know, switch off at some point, because you need it. And I think a lot of artists are also dealing with the same problem, that it's very hard to also turn off. It's 24/7 something that always keeps on going.
Yeah, and it's really important to, it's like a lot of jobs have work-life balance, and I think the music industry is one that the lines are very blurred between that. So I think it's important to set boundaries sometimes. Do you think that there's enough support in the industry for mental health with professionals? Or do you think maybe that's something that could be improved?
It's a very good question. I think it definitely is around a lot. I do think that a lot of people are not maybe as aware of it. So I've known a lot of artists, especially when they're, let's say, still in their 20s. They think they're kind of like invincible, living on Red Bull or, you know, having an unhealthy lifestyle. And there's definitely people around you that can help. But I usually notice that the hardest thing to break is first the boundary of them, you know, realizing that this doesn't last forever. You're going to run into a wall at some point. And then after that, they need to find the right people around them. And from what I've seen, there's always a lot of good people in the music industry that really care personally. They're emotionally invested in the people that they work with. But I think the awareness in terms of mental health could be better, so that it's more of an important thing. Even when you're feeling fine and you're doing okay, it is something you need to think about today, because it's not something like that comes up like a headache. You feel it like, oh, maybe tomorrow I have a headache coming up or something. It's really something that creeps up over years and years of more or less abuse of your body and your mental state. And it doesn't switch off by taking a pill. It's building down again. The overstressing that you've been doing over those years needs to be built down again. So that's something I always try to tell the artists that I work with a lot as well, to take care of themselves. And the people in our team is the same thing that I also tell them, like, you know, taking care of yourself and of your body is really important, even if you don't feel like it's important for you right now. It will be important at some point for everyone.
Yeah, definitely. I think there's a lot of pressure in the industry at the minute as well, with social media and constantly feeling like you have to be ahead of the game.
Yeah, for sure.
It's definitely a subject that I think needs to be at the forefront of everything in this industry.
Yeah.
What motivates you personally?
My motivation came from the creative drive that I've always had, like we just talked about as well, from an early age on, that I wanted to do something to express myself, you know, through music, through drawings, through writing. So I think doing that is something that really motivates me a lot, being able to do that for a living. And I think also the people that we work with in the music industry also really motivates me. It's not necessarily a work relationship with everyone, but also more on the personal level, just a friendship that you start building with people. And I think working with people then together towards a shared goal in terms of releases with somebody or shows or whatever, and then achieving those goals together, I think that's something that that definitely keeps me going, you know.
Yeah, I think that's a good thing about the industry, is your network becomes your friends in a way, doesn't it?
Yeah. Part of why also it's hard to turn off sometimes, you know, like there's no, you know, professional work boundary, let's say, for people to just at 10 a.m. or 9 p.m. to start texting you at night or something like that. But at the same time, it's also very gratifying having those people around you. It's very different from just a coworker being at a consultancy company or something like that.
Yeah, definitely. It is a very sociable industry.
Right.
How would you suggest someone could start their career in the music industry? I know it's a really broad question, but I suppose what would the starting steps be?
You're saying it's a very boring question, but I myself find it probably the most important question out there, because I also notice that that's a lot of times what people are maybe overlooking when they try to get into the music industry. And something I see a lot when we have vacancies and people apply for it is that with the music industry, it's kind of like an open door that a lot of people would come in. And when we ask them, why do you want to work specifically here? They say, because I love music. I always have music turned on. I had somebody, for example, in a motivation letter write that she loved to cook for friends and she would play all kinds of music for them. And that's something that I definitely understand from their point of view, that they're thinking like, you know, that's why it's important for me. But I always give the example as well that I am a very big lover of pizza. I love to eat it every day, but it doesn't make me a pizza baker. I would love to eat it every day. I cannot eat it every day, but if I could, I would. But it doesn't make me a great pizza baker. So we're looking for, you know, that extra mile, as in like, what are you going to add as value for our company? And that's where, you know, some proven experience comes in. So a little bit deeper besides just, I like to listen to music a lot. We're not going to request people to be a DJ Mac top 10 DJ or something like that. But it is important that we can kind of see that you've done more than just listening to music. So even if you're not a music producer, that you would, for example, say like, you know, I had a friend who was a music producer and I tried to manage him for some time. Or I asked him, could I run your TikTok and give you some ideas, you know, that you can record. I think creating a certain portfolio with that is very important for us. And this way we can also see, you know, who would be the right fit for the company and who would be somebody who's maybe just figuring out where they want to go with their career. If they're 100% dedicated to music already, or if they're still thinking about like what they actually want. And if you go to our team, for example, everybody has some kind of deeper connection with music, deeper than just listening to it. And I'm not saying, again, everybody has to perform on stage or everybody has to be a music producer, but let's say we take the music producers out. We still have somebody who, when he came to us, he did an internship at a radio station in the Netherlands called Slam FM, which is where he then stepped up working at Wall Recordings, Afrojack's label. So that was, you know, like a no-brainer for us to then really question, like, is this somebody who wants to be in the music industry? For the people that might not have that experience yet, you know, something as simple as, you know, I sell beats on beatstars.com, which is also one of our other employees, is already something that showcased to us that we knew, like, okay, this is somebody who knows really what music is. It's a bigger risk for us to hire somebody who, let's say, came from beauty industry, who knows everything about facial creams, but doesn't necessarily know what on social media, what posts work well and what posts are not engaging for a crowd that are following music. So to come back to your question, I think the proven experience or just the affinity that people can showcase, that is really the most important. It's the basic first step for us to pick anybody for a next conversation or an assignment round or something like that when we start hiring. And yeah, just listening to music is unfortunately not enough. We're looking for a little bit more than that.
Yeah, I guess as well it's going back to that entrepreneurial mindset is if you've actively gone out and tried to make your goals happen or tried to get experience in something, then that demonstrates to you the passion and the drive to want to be in the industry.
Yeah, and it's like you're saying that the passion and the drive, that's important even if somebody didn't score a, you know, 5 million stream song on Spotify, but they did consistently release music over the last, you know, like 3 years or so. Know what the industry is like, know what players are out there. Like, that's way easier for us to work with than having to explain to somebody what a drop or a build in a song is, you know, that we need to start explaining all the basics. So yeah, definitely the drive and the passion is important there.
Yeah, definitely. Are there any other personality traits you think are very useful for the music industry?
Well, I mean, the most obvious one is probably, you know, having some type of creativity over you. So sometimes we have people that would apply that, you know, to each their own, first of all, but it's not necessarily screaming creativity. And I think in the music industry, that's really what sets us apart from, let's say, a consultancy job or IT job or a banking job. It's really all about creativity and marketing and that kind of stuff. So if we do get a vibe of somebody who's not going to be the right fit because we don't see the creativity, I think that's a very important one where we start. And then that in combination with hopefully some proven experience, like that will be a perfect combination for us to then start talking more to somebody and see kind of like what that person's like.
Yeah, definitely. And what opportunities are there out there? I know we briefly spoke about an internship at Future House, for example.
Yeah.
Do you think that there's lots of internships out there, or can you explain a little bit about maybe your internship and how people can kind of could apply for that?
I think there's a lot of opportunities. There might even be more opportunities here than, let's say, at you know, more corporate jobs. And I think the reason why is that In general, the music industry is a lot more flexible. So the workspace is a little bit more flexible. If you want to work for an artist, let's say, they're a lot easier to then say, okay, you know, could you maybe run my Facebook page? Could you run this page for me? Could you run that page for me? Or just a SoundCloud or something like that. Whereas if you want to work at a big bank job, there's like 10 rounds of interviews that you need to go through. Then there's still a chance that you do not get picked. If you do get picked, there's a very strict onboarding, etc. And things are a little bit more loose in the music industry, but it all comes down to you then presenting yourself and taking initiative, that even if the job description is not out there, to start chasing people and to say like, hey, not only the open question, can I do something, but just going to them and say like, hey, I run TikTok pages as a hobby. I even get more engagement on my videos than you do. And I've been following you for maybe like a year or 2 years or something like that. I think these could be great ideas. And I think that especially in the music industry, they're a lot more open to then say, you know, this guy, he knows something. And we would love to have him on board, even if it's for an internship. So I think people are a lot more flexible to interchange people coming into their team and out of their team. And therefore, there's just a lot more opportunity as well, as long as you know kind of like where to go, where you can add value for somebody. And then just, yeah, you know, making a ballsy move of just approaching them and saying like, hey, I think I could do this better. I could add something for you there.
Yeah, I suppose it's also about creating your own opportunity rather than seeing a job advert for an internship. Maybe, like you say, be a bit more ballsy and contact the company and say, I'm really good at this. Do you have this job going? Because I couldn't do it X, Y, and Z.
Yeah, and I think what else is important is that even if the description is not out there, there's not an open vacancy for a certain role, already letting people know, like, I'm very good at this, but you might not have a spot for me right now, but please keep me in the back of your mind. Then before they start going through the vacancy next time, they'll probably just send you a message and just say like, hey, we talked a year ago or 2 years ago. There is now an opportunity and we would love to know if you're interested. So I think especially putting, you know, your personal brand out there with people, getting your name out there so that they remember you as well when it does come up is also very important, and not always hold off and wait until there's like an official position somewhere, because you never know. Things are so fast in this industry. They might need somebody like the next day, or they might need somebody in a year. But just put your name out there, and then at some point people are going to call you back and say like, hey, we talked about this and I think we could do a coffee sometime to talk about some things some more, you know.
I speak about it a lot in these conversations, but your network's quite important in that regard then. Researching labels and who works there and getting in touch with them, even if it's just for a coffee or a Zoom call, you're building your own network for these opportunities.
Yeah, building the network is very important. And I think that's also where a lot of people might misjudge, that they think like, who am I? I'm a nobody. Why would somebody speak to me? That when you do reach out to people long enough and you try to be in a certain room with somebody, so even if it's just going to shows as a guest or something like that, the more you do it, the more you'll get out there, the more people will remember your face. And at some point, somebody will reach out to you and say like, hey, you know, I seen you everywhere, or we talked before or something like that. But that's where investing in your network is very important, even if there's not a direct one-on-one, you know, goal that you can make going somewhere. It might be next year that it actually starts paying off. But who knows, you know?
Yeah, as long as your name is in somebody's head.
Right. And your face. Yeah.
And your face. Yeah. If you could change one thing about the industry right now, what would it be? I know earlier we briefly touched on the mental health side of things, but is there anything else that you would like to change right now?
Right. So since we already touched base on the mental health, I'm going to just skip over that because I think we probably covered it. But maybe more on the ethical side of things, one thing that I would hope to change at some point in the future is that I think it is becoming more and more increasingly hard for people to actually make a living just off streaming alone. And the payouts per stream have been going down year over year over year. And Yeah, people have to do a lot nowadays. It's not just, you know, making music. It's being a musician, being a mixing and mastering engineer, being a social media genius, being a graphic designer, being a marketeer, etc. And it just streaming alone is becoming harder and harder for them to make a living. So I think it would be terrific if, you know, people with quality music could say, like, I can do this for a living without, for example, having to try 5 or 6 other side hustles that I actually don't want to spend my time on in a week, but I have to make a living somehow. And to maybe bridge it back to the mental health part, I've seen people crumble when they're still in that intermediate phase of, I have a daytime job, but I would like to do music. And then coming from that job, being exhausted, and then having 50 billion things to do, is also where their mental health will usually deteriorate if they don't have the right attention for it as well, to like give themselves some space and some peace of mind. So it's really, really hard when people are in that intermediate period of not being able to live off of it, having to do another job. So I think going back to, you know, if people could live off of the streaming alone just a little bit more, I think it would make the world a lot more beautiful, in a sense that people don't have to spread their attention over things that they don't want to necessarily do, and it's not really good for their mental health as well. They can just focus on their craft, on their art, and just being the best that they can do there.
Yeah, definitely. That's a great answer. I agree completely with that. And I think the people who maybe have started off in life with a little bit more fortunate than others, they're the ones that kind of succeed at the minute because they've got a backing behind them. And I think sometimes that can be a little bit unfair. So I agree with you on that.
Yeah, plus some people, you know, that have been around long enough, they made enough bank selling CDs back in the 90s or early 2000s that they don't need it as much anymore. Snoop Dogg is not going to care that much of, you know, streaming a million less or more. But it's really the people that are now trying to make it, trying to get into the industry. For them, the threshold is getting higher and higher. And that sometimes just pains my heart seeing how much people are struggling while they do have, you know, a great spirit, or like they're very good at what they do. But yeah, you got to put bread on the table as well. Especially if some people already move over to having a family, then you need to support your family as well. So yeah, it's just very hard.
Yeah, exactly. Well, hopefully whoever's listening can change that at some point in the future.
Maybe we should check back in 5 years or so and see how we're doing.
Yeah, definitely. And I always end these chats by asking, what advice would you give yourself 10 years ago when you were just starting out? What advice would you have given yourself then?
I think if I would have talked to my younger self 10 years ago, I had the feeling, so I sometimes suffer from like imposter syndrome, and I had the feeling that I wanted to be in the music industry, but who am I? You know, like, what have I done so far? What am I going to do? And I think what I would advise myself is that, you know, you're worthy enough of also being in that music industry in any kind of way. And just by simply, you know, focusing on myself, working on my business every day, day in, day out, that's where I got today. So I think just the persistence, resilience, and the trust in yourself that something good will come out of it. Even if you don't see it today, don't stress over it now. You don't have to have all the results tomorrow, but it's about the long run. So we've been doing this for 10 going on 11 years now. And if I could have told myself that we would be doing this for, you know, going on 11 years, then I probably would have taken it. I would have said, like, you know, that's awesome. You can do what you want to do, you know, for the rest of your, the next 11 years. But back then it felt very far away from me, which is long, a decade. But I definitely would have told myself, don't worry, like, you're worthy. You'll get there. Just stay persistent. Focus on yourself. Just be the best that you can. It's going to be some bumps along the way for sure. But in the end, it's about like reaching the finish line. You know, it's like a marathon. It's not a sprint. And I think I would have said that to myself. Yeah.
Yeah. Having patience.
Exactly. It's a nice way to summer it. Having patience. Yeah.
Yeah. Perfect. Well, that seems like the perfect natural ending. And thank you so much for joining me today. I know how busy you are running a company, so it's been brilliant, and some really great advice in there too. So thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks so much for listening. Subscribe to the podcast to catch the next episode. And if you'd like to ask our guests any questions, or if there are any job roles you'd love to learn more about, then get in touch with me via LinkedIn at Rosie Black.